think I will just...
Okay. Today is July 18th, 1966. And I'm Neil Rosenberg. And that's Pete Rowan and Richard Green.
Hello.
And...
Does the mic pick up like this for
us? Yeah, I think it'll get everything.
It's a directional phallus.
The purpose of the interview is to describe a Bob Dylan recording session at which you were present. And can you give me some idea of a date, more or less?
No.
No. Well, it was April or May of this year, right?
Yeah, when did you come down there?
March.
March.
It was in March.
March.
Oh.
No, it was way after I came down.
Was it? It was about a week after.
No.
April. All right, it was in April. It was in Nashville. How did you hear about the session? How did you...
Well, this singer down in Nashville, a songwriter named Chris Gantry, told us about it.
Uh-huh.
And he had been over the night before. The night before, they had started at 6 and gone till 6 in the morning, I think. Uh-huh. Working on one song.
You don't know which song it was?
I think it's the long one on that record. What is it called?
The one that takes up a whole side of this latest one, yeah. And he'd been at that session.
Yeah. And he could get us into this other one, so we went over. And there we were.
Was that where was that? At the Columbia
Studios.
Studios in Nashville. And what was this in the morning or in the afternoon?
It was at night.
At night, yeah.
I think he only records after 6, it's by the full moon and all that.
So who else was there? What was the scene when you got there?
We walked in the door and into the control booth. And in the control booth was this woman who's supposed to be, I guess, Dylan's wife, Albert Grossman, his manager.
Yeah.
Who looks like George Washington.
Well, how do you mean? Long?
His hair comes down in the back like...
Yeah, real long.
Full. And then there were all kinds of interested agents and people in the control room. And as soon as we walked in, we realized that the first thing you could hear was these two drums going in the studio, thumping away. And every once in a while, the A&R man would tell the drummers to vary the beat. And sometimes they go like, or, and then sometimes.
And what were they recording at that point?
Something about remember what it was.
It was a long blues with very personal references.
The lady took a trip with the tramp, who's a hobo.
And what was Dylan playing?
On that, let's see, he was...
He was sitting on a stool.
Yeah.
He was just playing harp and singing and playing the harmonica for the whole thing. And he also had a movie magazine.
Yeah. And he was reading that?
Yeah, I think he drew some inspiration from it. Comments on it.
Yeah.
All the time.
You were telling me yesterday how he talked. What was he saying?
Well, he would just do things like he'd read off names like Melina Mercury and Anthony Quinn, and he'd say, right. And his crew would all go, right.
Right.
Or he'd laugh. And then Albert Grossman would stand up and wheel his huge body around and throw another quarter to the ceiling.
He's throwing quarters into the ceiling.
Yeah.
What is it, that fiberboard stuff?
Yeah, in the control room. There's about 15 or 20 quarters stuck in the ceiling.
Was anyone high?
I think they were all stoned.
You couldn't tell.
I wouldn't, I don't know.
Yeah. How many musicians were there?
There was rhythm guitar, lead guitar, three guitars were there all again?
Yeah.
And there was that Al Cooper wearing a...
Charlie McCoy was there.
Yeah.
He was wearing a polka dot, blue and white polka dot shirt. Looking very...
He was looking very,
very.
And the music was abominable. They would just try again and again to to get a certain sound, and I don't know. They would settle on something that was it just was not good music. It was, would be my opinion.
Yeah.
The guitars weren't together. They were off time, and it was. I wonder what that record sounds like.
Yeah. It came out pretty well on the record. I mean, it smoothed it out. But through the whole thing, there were these drums that never stopped.
They never stopped
drummers
being.
Never stopped drumming. Sometimes they'd get apart until you'd hear the laps.
Who were these all Nashville musicians, or were they guys that Dylan had brought with him?
Cooper was the only one he brought with him.
Uh-huh.
And Charlie McCoy was there, and he was playing guitar, not harmonica, which he... Oh. He's the one who played harmonica on the Flat Scruggs album.
Uh-huh. How many songs did they do while you were there?
Just worked on this one.
That one song. How long were you there?
An hour, I guess.
Yeah, we saw the beginnings of another song. That they started to do. Tentatively titled "What Can I Do for Your Wigwam," right?
Right. Tell me about that. I mean,
I don't remember much. It was definitely uninteresting.
Yeah.
We left.
But you said the A&R man.
Well, he asked him. He said, "What's the name of that Bob?"
Yeah.
And the microphone was right close to his mouth, and he was going all the time like this. He was going, "Well, what you can do for your wigwam, right?"
that was how it was named.
That's how it was.
The A&R man. Oh, go ahead.
And Grossman took another quarter.
Yeah, two and
a half. Sort of an exclamation point.
Yeah. The A&R man have much to do with directing the session. We tell people how to play the...
Race. Yeah, well, he told the drums exactly what to do.
If anyone had an idea, they'd say it, you know. I was surprised that there were so many minds involved in that particular music.
Yeah. Did it look like they had planned much beforehand, or did it look very much impromptu?
Impromptu, I didn't know.
Who was the A&R man? Do you remember?
It's the same one every time for Columbia. I don't know who it is.
Don Law, would that be who it was? Or?
No.
Is Johnson, is he an A&R man? Or is he just, yeah, I think it was
Robert Johnson.
Bob Johnson?
Yeah.
He was a young guy, and
Hang on.
Yeah.
That's what Grossman looked like.
Extremely long hair. How old is
Grossman?
He's what, in his
middle
50s?
Age.
Middle age?
Yeah.
And you said the A&R man was a young guy, huh?
Yeah, and I don't think he knew a hell of a lot about music. You know,
he
accepted things, which let things go by, which...
Sure.
Yeah.
But they did a pretty careful editing job, because on the record... most of it, you know, there's not too many mistakes.
Were there separate mics for each?
Everybody, yeah.
Everybody? And separate baffles or screens set up in there,
well,
too?
Well, the drums had a screen between them, but they were all around this very large room. They weren't close to each other at all.
And they weren't in any sort of, like in a bluegrass band, you'd have the guitar here and the, you know, banjo here.
No, they were just...
scattered around.
You know,
and was Dylan in the center or just off in one corner?
Yeah, he was about in the center on the stool.
Yeah.
They were debating whether to put his voice through a couple of fuzz tone units.
Wow. And how long had he been in Nashville?
I guess a couple of days.
Mm-hmm. So was everything cut in these two sessions or over a period of...
He had come down before.
Oh, he had?
You know, he makes trips periodically.
Yeah.
He takes trips periodically.
Do you have any other impressions? Anything else you remember about
Well, I have just a personal reaction to the whole thing. I was really surprised at the poor music quality of the music.
Yeah.
I think I must have said something to Pete at the time. I mean, it was amateurish.
Yeah.
There's so much that can be done. I don't understand why he keeps using those same chord changes and melodies, you know, old rock and roll things over and over again. Yeah. I mean, he hasn't used a waltz since the early days when he did that stuff.
Yeah.
Sidemen, I don't think, I can't recall any one of them really being right with it.
Yeah.
You know, they might have been with a country singer, I don't know.
But
this, they didn't.
Were these mostly country music sidemen?
Yeah, guys they were play? Nashville guys, yeah.
They didn't play many rock and roll sessions.
Oh, they do all kinds of sessions.
Well, in Nashville, there's lots of rock and roll-like stuff going on.
Yeah. Do you know why Dylan was recording in Nashville rather than New York?
Well, it was after the Nashville sound.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
What is the Nashville sound? Is that reference to the ability of the engineers and so on, or to the sidemen?
It's just the combination of instruments.
Yeah.
And of them doing certain things. You know, the drum has to be that straight, simple beat, you know.
Yeah.
And tenor electric guitars, you know, high, the bass cut off.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm.
And what else is in it? Piano.
Yeah. Well, who was playing piano at this session?
Cooper was doing it. Oh, he wasn't playing Nashville piano.
He wasn't.
Yeah. You've heard the record, Neil?
I've only heard a few cuts on it. Hmm.
But it's a lot, much different from the stuff he did with Bloomfield.
Yes.
It's real pat patterns in the songs.
Yeah.
I don't think he's taking himself as seriously as he used to.
Mm-hmm. You think there's
musically? I don't know. I haven't listened to the songs enough to. But he does so much work, you know, mm-hmm. that half of it's bound to be, you know,
there's bad. But do you think that he's putting people on?
What do you mean?
In general or in specific, you know?
I think he's recording anything he wants to record,
mm-hmm.
and it just will be put out on record. If people buy it, they're mm-hmm. putting themselves on, mm-hmm. if that's such a thing.
Yeah.
I don't think he's trying to put people on.
Uh-huh.
That's not his goal.
Was he talking with people during this period? I mean, while you were in there?
Just through these quips that he was making about, you know, mm-hmm. in the movie magazine. Mm-hmm. And
people, go ahead, I'm sorry.
It was just a very relaxed atmosphere.
Yeah.
They were all in the studio and everyone else, Grossman and the rest, were in the control booth. No one seemed to be working very hard, although the money that, you know, it's a very expensive session, 12 hours.
It
was at night, which right away is a double, it's triple or something, after 6.
Yeah.
And they were just laying around, you know.
Wow.
I mean, I just can't see. I mean, if I was doing my thing,
yeah.
it would be a lot different.
Yeah. From one take to the next, would he change his singing much? Did he fool around much that way?
I don't think he did.
No, as I remember his singing, it was mostly that intense kind of thing, you know.
That kind of monotone stuff.
I can't remember. I want you to, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Get stoned.
Yeah.
I guess that's where we recorded Rainy Day Women.
That session, or?
I don't know. I don't remember seeing any horns there, though.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder where I did record that.
But then, so there wasn't any sort of general conversation going on there. It was just Dylan was making comments, and everyone, the sidemen were talking.
Dylan was passing time until the musicians and the A&R men just got ready to play again. Then he'd do his songs.
Yeah.
With whatever backup had come up out of.
Come up. They'd sort of kick around just what they're going to do, this take sort of thing.
Yeah, but there was none of this. I mean, people weren't going over licks and saying, yeah, we'll use this lick and stuff like that. Everyone was just sort of sitting around. The drums were going, and pretty soon everyone would fall in with the drums and play.
Yeah. Lack of musical interest.
Yeah. The Nashville Sidemen, though, I mean, did they seem to be bored with it or interested? What could you tell their reaction from watching?
Well, there was a rhythm. I always think that rhythm guitar players are bored anyway.
Yeah.
No matter who they're playing with. So I.
Yeah.
And this one didn't look too involved. Yeah. The rhythm, and he kept trying to do these rock and roll things. Remember the dum 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 stuff, the bass stuff. And it was the most cliche things you can imagine. That he wasn't getting it right.
Yeah. Who was playing lead guitar? Do you remember
that
session? Or you don't know these musicians?
No, Charlie McCoy was playing guitar on a lot of the stuff. Though. Uh-huh. He plays everything. He plays trombone, trumpet. Harp, guitar. He plays them both at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
He has his own band. He plays electric bass and trumpet at the same time.
Do you go to many sessions?
Just once in a while.
Yeah.
Go over it. All the sessions are, you know, it's a groove that they're all in down there. This whole idea of waiting, you know, take 2 hours to do two songs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone sits down and. And they have pat phrases and pat turnarounds that, you know, they'll do for.
Yeah.
I think the bluegrass sessions would be interesting, you know, because of the immediacy of the music, but the other ones aren't really too interesting.
Yeah. What are some of the other sessions that you have seen?
I think. Were you with me that time that. Is it Merle Kilgore or someone? Merle Haggard.
Yeah.
No, I didn't see that.
Well, it was the same sort of thing. People sort of standing around for a long period of time.
Oh, yeah, and all kinds of interested country, you know, people who were business types, you know, sitting around in shades and nouveau Nashville hippies.
Yeah. Were there quite a few of these at the Dylan session, or were you...
No. Just his immediate... Family.
Yeah. So it was. You would say it was sort of an unusual session, or.
What do you mean?
I mean, not like the normal Nashville session, in some ways.
Well, it was like Nashville sessions, I think.
It happened in Nashville.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way, you know, they're very slow down there.
Yeah, yeah.
I've only been to very, very few, but I get this feeling of laziness.
Yeah.
You know, I did a demo session that I was played on.
Oh.
And just, you know, the easiest things were done, only the easiest things.
Mm-hmm.
And no experimentation, nothing risky.
Yeah.
Not the slightest risk. And here, the guy was a songwriter, and he wanted to sell his songs to a singer.
Yeah.
So I guess he figured the best way to do that is to keep everything down. Don't take any chances. Just stick to the patterns. Well, like they had a George Jones song, you know, and he had a somebody else's song.
You play it in that style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what got me. He wasn't doing his own songs. I mean, they were his own songs, but they were forced. They were in another sound.
Yeah.
For someone else's sound.
People are pretty good at picking up, working out and playing various artists' sounds.
Oh, yeah.
This is
they can do that.
Big trademark sort of thing. So were these guys trying to play a Bob Dylan sound, or were they just trying to play a Nashville sound?
They just supplied the bass.
Yeah.
That you know, pattern. On the record, there's one of those things like the chord changes are G, E minor, and C, D, and G.
Yeah.
Those kind of things. And they just do that. And no one would... Cooper would get excited sometimes and do some stuff on the piano.
Yeah.
But there was no immediate excitement in the music at all.
Yeah.
And I don't think... that's one of my main criticisms about the Nashville sound and the recording down there, is that I don't think that you can get a real exciting musical sound without your own group, you know.
Yeah.
Without a group that's working together and trying to communicate. And
this wasn't Dylan's. Dylan doesn't have a group per se, except Cooper. Or?
He had a group from Toronto, and I don't know if he has them still.
Yeah.
That travels with him and plays.
Yeah.
The Hawks, I call them.
Oh. Have you ever seen him in a show?
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. And there wasn't much excitement or reaction to the fact that Dylan was in town, you know, or anything like this.
I don't think anybody knew about it.
Yeah.
Everybody seemed bored, even he seemed bored.
Yeah. Doesn't he have a pretty good reputation as a songwriter?
In Nashville? Yeah. He's a lot classified as different.
Different.
Different. Yeah. That's a judgment.
Yeah. But that's a good... I mean, that's...
Well, it's good positive. To them because it sells.
Yeah. But, it seems funny that if he's regarded as a song, you know, songwriter and is doing new songs that no one's around picking up, I suppose they wait to see which songs are going to sell, you know, before people start recording his songs, stuff that he's written.
Well, I don't know what you mean by around. You said no one...
You mean other singers coming around to hear his stuff?
Yeah, at a session. You said that some of the Nashville sessions you've been, you know, there have been other people hanging around the recording room.
Yeah. Well, a singer who's going to be recording on his own won't ever come around to another singer's session to hear what he's doing, to try and take something from him.
Yeah.
Won't do that at all.
They're waiting.
The people who get up, who are in the recording end of things in Nashville, you know, are very secure in their position, most of them.
Yeah.
And are just waiting for other stuff to come along mm-hmm. from younger songwriters in Nashville.
Mm-hmm. They don't do they don't want established artists.
But they're very bag conscious, you know.
Yeah.
Something. This is someone's bag.
Yeah.
And if something sounds like someone else's bag, then they sort of shy away. Or unless it's selling at that point, then they'll take it and use it.
Yeah. Like Vietnam songs.
Mm-hmm. Or George Jones' slow ones.
These are pretty popular.
Like, that was the comment at this art session that George needs another slow one to follow up that slow one he did before.
Yeah.
That hit of his. I forget what it was.
Yeah.
Take Me?
Yeah.
Take Me.
He needs another one like that. Another one in that bag.
Oh, yeah.
So, the songwriter wrote one for him.
It's pretty sort of professional and cut and dried feeling at most of this stuff.
Yeah, the commercial stuff. Yeah.
And you've never been to Bluegrass Session?
Mm-mm. We hope we're going to be in one soon.
Well, I guess that gives us a pretty good picture.
Well, goodbye.
Goodbye. Thanks a lot.